just want to thank you for Steve. Lord, I thank you that you've laid a word on his heart for us this morning. I pray that you give us attentive ears and open hearts to receive this, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
Morning, everybody. I must say, there looks to be an awful lot of you out there. I was thinking as I was standing there, it's not very far to walk from that chair to here. It's about 2 miles, I've just discovered. It's a bit like walking the plank, and you think, what am I going to do when I get to the end? Because there's no way out. But a few months ago, God started speaking to me about something, and I want to share it with you. And if I had my way, I've got to say, I would love to actually have a few minutes with each one of you individually rather than stand and talk to everybody at once. It's a kind of a one-to-one, really. You know, when you're teaching, you have these one-to-one situations, and you can actually forget whatever's going on in the rest of the class, whether they're good or bad, whatever. And you can speak to one person, and you can talk about their particular issues, their particular problems, the things they're finding difficult. The other week I was in a class and I got a chance to spend some time with one particular lad, and at the end of it doesn't happen every time, I've got to admit, but at the end of it he had a great big beaming smile all over his face, because that day he learnt to multiply. And he'd never learnt to multiply. He was 16 or 17, he'd been through school, it hadn't happened for him for whatever reason, I don't know, but on that day he learnt to multiply, and he couldn't actually stop the grin right across his face. It nearly cut his head in half, and I'm glad it didn't quite. But so if I was speaking to you individually, it'd be a little bit different. So I just want to sort of almost imagine, I want you to imagine that nobody else is here. Just want you to imagine that if I catch your eye, I'm talking to you. That's how it's in my mind anyway. I want to start off with just a couple of illustrations from my life, and we've all been there. I reckon every child, certainly every lad at school, you know, what's one game that everybody plays? Football. And break time, play time, let's play football. Everybody lines up. 2 captains, your captain, I'll have him, I'll have him, I'll have him, I'll have him. And you get to the end of the line, and there's one poor little lad who has been left till last. And it happens time and again. And you just wish that you weren't that little boy. You wish you were like my heroes were Tom Finney or Danny Blanchflower. Wayne Rooney wasn't even born when I played football. And I just wanted to be someone who had a kind of an ability at playing football, not the one who tripped over. The greatest moment I ever had when I was playing football, I was actually picked to play for my junior school in Bodisham. And we were playing against the team from the first years of the secondary school, Bodisham Village College. And we got roundly beaten, but part of the match I shall never, ever forget. Somehow the ball landed in front of me, and I was running with it. It was sort of going just in front of me, as it ought to do. That was quite a success in itself. And I didn't know what to do with it. I really didn't know what to do with it. And so I booted it. And it went up, and it just got over the goalkeeper's hands, behind him and into the net. And I was the hero. And it never happened. And I was so thrilled to bits. And I confess to this day, there was no skill in that whatsoever. Another illustration. Who here plays chess? Yeah. Right. I've tried. I never got really... But I do remember a little bit about chess. And on the chessboard, you've got different kinds of pieces. And you experts, please don't correct me until afterwards if I've got any of these things wrong. But on the chessboard, you've got the queen. Okay? Most of us know that the queen is there, stands tall above the others, can go in any direction as far as the eye can see. Very powerful. Probably the most powerful piece on the board. Along the line, you've got the things at the end, the rook. The rook can go in straight lines as far as the eye can see. can't go past anything in its way. I would have liked to have been a queen or a rook, and if not those, I would have liked to have been a bishop. Not a real bishop, you understand. Just a bishop on the board. They can go in diagonal lines, a little bit clever, you may think, but nevertheless very powerful. They can go right across the board in one move. And then you get the knights. Knights on their white chargers. And they do a rather nifty move. They can jump over pieces. They can go two in one way and three in another and zap somebody from a direction they weren't expecting. Or three in one way and a two in another. Forwards, backwards, you name it. They're pretty good. But you know what I was in my little vision? I was a pawn. And the pawn can go one way only, and that's forward. Can't go back. One move at a time, unless you're very privileged, your first move, you can go two. It really is not the kind of piece that everybody really wants to be. I didn't want to be a pawn. But what's the common purpose of all those bits on the board? Somebody can tell me. To protect the king. And actually, when I was looking it up, I found that in early chess games, when they were scoring, they gave different people, their different parts, scores. A pawn was 1 point. And a knight was 3 points. So was the bishop. The rook was rather more important. That got 5 points. Most important of all was the queen, and that was scored 9 points, which rather surprised me. I'd rather thought that would be a little bit more. Anybody guess how many, on this particular scoring system, how many points the king got? 200. And I thought, wow. There was me thinking I would like to be the queen on the board, but actually there was something far more important. There was this king. I thought, what is the king? And in my little picture, I was just seeing the board from one side, and God was playing chess. Don't want to be irreverent, but that's what he was doing in his spare moments. I didn't even see who was on the other side. Don't know who he was playing against. I didn't quite understand who the king was. Certainly wasn't Jesus. But as I was thinking about it, the king was his plan, his purpose, his kingdom outworking and growing and taking in more and more ground and bringing in more and more people into its fold. And that's the thing that we're all playing for. Whether you're a 1-pointer or a 9-pointer really counts little in comparison with the 200-pointer of what God has in mind. And as I was thinking about these things, I thought, does it really matter if I'm just a pawn? But the point is, it does matter quite often. And I feel a little embarrassed to say what I'm going to say, but for too many years, I've had my eye off the ball of what God wanted me to do. And I freely admit it. And it's in some ways, I'm sure it's hindered the things that I've done. You remember that song that we sometimes get sung as a party piece? If I were not upon this stage, there's a place I'd rather be. And in my mind, I changed it around and say, if I was not trapped being me, there's a me I'd rather be. I just was not happy being me. I was not happy not being able to do the things I thought God had called me to. And it bred all kinds of wrong emotions and feelings in me. But no power play for me, just a pawn. No great obituary in the Telegraph when I die. No mention in the history books, just a pawn, a plodder. Just doing what has to be done. And sometimes you think, if only I could be like them. If only I could be doing that. Not this rather restrictive role that you feel God has put on you. You feel not very useful and you don't feel very important. When Sylvia and I, not long after we first met, we met a vicar in Leeds where we were studying, Dr. David Mowbray. How many people have heard of the wonderful Dr. David Mowbray? No, I thought not. Wonderful man. He was a obscure vicar in an obscure Anglican church with a pretty small congregation, and he was a godsend to us. He described his ministry as this. He said, I dig the garden. He said, I know what my role is. I dig the garden. Other people might sow the seeds. Other people might get the harvest. He says, but I know what my role is. I dig the garden of people's hearts. And he was brilliant for us. I'm sure there were wishes in his heart that he might have a bigger church, a bigger congregation, a more exciting profile. One of his stories was, because the Christian Union at Leeds was held in his church hall. And I think because it was in his church hall, they let him speak once a year for the privilege. And he always told a joke about himself, that he preached a sermon, he got home and he said to his wife, "What did you think?" Well, she said, "First of all, you read it. Secondly, you didn't read it very well. And thirdly," she said, "it wasn't worth reading." And that's what she said about him. That's not what I'm saying about him. So I was trying to work out what would my title for what my title be for this morning. And I thought of a few, which I wrote down somewhere and I've lost it. All right. Heavenly chess, or the big picture. Because the other thing that crossed my mind as all these things started to come over together, I can't give you one verse for this, by the way. It's something that God brought into my mind over a few months. And it was almost like I looked up and there was this overarching sky almost, bit like some of the old medieval paintings, like the heavens were over there. And that was God's all-embracing, all-inclusive plan for what he had in mind for this world. And do you know, it was magnificent, but there, a little tiny, insignificant spot, which perhaps nobody else would see, there was a little tiny thing that was me. I had a part in this all-embracing plan. And it was, all of a sudden, it dawned on me, I shouldn't be bothered about what I want to do. I'm just absolutely amazed he's got something for me to do. And all of a sudden, it started to free me up from thinking what I wanted me to be doing. It was much more important that I really got a solid grasp on what God wanted me to do. And so all these things started to develop. And I want to read you from Romans chapter 12, first 8 verses. You know it well. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Or ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness." And as those verses came into my mind, I thought, there's nothing quite like being a sacrifice. Don't you just love the idea of being a sacrifice? And don't we let those words sort of rush over our minds? I'd love to be a sacrifice. And I was thinking about the pictures I saw as a child, the Aztecs and the Incas. Anybody remember seeing those? Mountains, little steps carved up, going up. And there was these priests dragging poor people struggling who didn't want to go there because they were going to be a sacrifice. It wasn't willing and it wasn't voluntary. It was just they were being a sacrifice, and it's messy and it hurts and there's no coming back. How many of us have really laid down our lives as a living sacrifice in the service of whatever God has called us to do? I think I've done it lots of times, and I keep climbing back off the altar because I don't always like what it is. Those of us who went to the prayer day in Birmingham, we heard what some people go through purely because they're Christians and they don't compromise their faith because they get put in prison or tortured or things like that. It's an awful life that some people live, but they will not back down from it because they have been called and they've truly made their lives a living sacrifice. There's nothing more precious than you can give to God than your life. He gives you the gifts, you give them back. He gives you your life, and that's the thing which really makes you special, because he's made you exactly as you are, with all your gifts, with all your talents, with all that is you. All the loving and the caring, the vision. See, some people are visionaries. I love the bit in the Corinthians bit where Paul says, talks about the eye that can see, you know. I'd love to be an eye. I'd love to be a visionary, but I'm not. I just have to accept it. I'd love to be able to see that's where we're going. That's where God's called us to, but I don't. I just have to accept that. And I'd love to be all the other bits, you know, the hand that gets things and brings them in. And I'm one of those bits. I really am one of those bits somewhere. I'm still trying. I think I'm a kidney somewhere. It's probably one of the most important things you've got, actually, but you don't give it much attention. And so as we go through, let me tell you the bit about me, which I'm a little bit embarrassed to say. And that is, when I was about 20, give or take a year or two, bit older maybe, when I was 20, I really felt God say to me I was to be a pastor. And I felt it passionately. And I've never, I've lost it now. That's why I'm here. I had that in my mind for years. And wherever I went, there was that something in me. I was not being allowed to do what I thought I ought to be doing. Maybe I had visions of grandeur, you know, walking down the street. Wonderful word yesterday, Pastor. Oh, Pastor, that was beautiful, that thing you said to me. What I missed was the fact, and I've no doubt about this whatsoever, that I'm a pastoral person. You know, there's no doubt, can't get away from it. I am what I am. You see, I didn't actually get, God was saying, look, you're a pastor. Go and be a pastor. Don't get appointed one. You are one. Just go and do it. And I suppose I've been doing that. But all the time it's been spoilt for me because I've had my eye off the ball. And I've been wanting, you know, we moved around the country quite a few times with my job. Been to lots of different churches, been blessed in them all. But none of them, and I couldn't understand this, none of them could see what I could see so clearly about me. I was a pastor. They didn't sort of give me the job. I couldn't get it. I really couldn't. It took me a long time before I got it, to be quite honest. And I think, actually, the journey back from what was a pretty frustrated life, it began when I was... When we moved back to this area, and we went to Fordham Kongs, we were there for 20 years. Absolutely no doubt we went to the right church for us at the time. God pointed it out so clearly. And I've got to be honest, when we went there, I thought, they will be pleased that I'm joining them. I, after all, had lived in a city, and these were country people. Bless their hearts. The first lesson I learned in Fordham was how much they could teach me. I really do mean that. I'm not just saying that because I'm standing here. They taught me so much about how to live the Christian life. And going there was the first stage of my journey towards being baptized in the Holy Spirit. It was a few years down the line. It still took me. Do you know, I used to get asked to go out and preach. We used to have a little competition. I mean, this is just not true, is it? The ones of us who used to go out, if somebody said, I'm going out to wherever, I'm not name names, somebody else would say, yeah, they asked me, but I couldn't go. You know, you're only second choice. And I think the worst thing I ever did was to actually drive round to a church to see if actually one of my friends had actually been asked, was his name on the board? Because I wanted to know if they hadn't asked me, why they asked him. I mean, how sad can you get? And really, I think I was attracted by the prospect of preaching powerful sermons, you know, world-changing sermons. And yet even international speakers, they get to the stage where they realise they've missed the ball too, you know. I don't mean there aren't godly people who have been called to an international ministry. There obviously are, and, you know, all honour to them. But I remember reading the Guy Chevrolet book, Turnings. One of the first things in that book that he says is very simply, he turned up to preach at one of Heidi Baker's conferences. She'd invited him over there. And he stood there in his smart suit, his tie, very well set up, kind of a chap, a bit like me, really. And He said, as he stood there, and as he watched the people dressed in rags walking out of the bush and the surrounding countryside to come and hear him, he looked at himself with all that he had, really well set up. He travelled first class. He would stay in hotels. And here they came. And he said, I stood there and I realised I had nothing of relevance to say to them at all. Nothing I said with my nicely ordered, set out Christianity would touch them, because their life was different from mine. Those of you who were here on Tuesday night will remember one of the things that J. John said was that, you know, in our Christian life, there are two bookends, like on the shelf of our life, and one of them is to know Christ, and the other one is to make him known. And if we're not knowing him, and if we're not making him known, the rest in the middle is wasted space. Because you want to know, I'm sure, that you're doing the thing that God has called you to do, so that only then will you really have that kind of relationship. You'll be at peace. You'll get to know him better, and you will also be set free to make him known to others in a way which is unique to you. I'm more convinced, this sounds like bragging, and it's not, I assure you. I know I'm a pawn, but there are things that I can say to people and a way I can say them to people that you can't. Does that make me special? Yes, it does. Does it make me better than you? No, it doesn't. Because there are things that you can say to people and ways you can say them to, you can say them in which I can't. I remember going to a men's meeting. It was all about this kind of time. Pastor Terry Yaroslaw was speaking. Maybe some men from this church went because it was sort of an area thing. I remember him talking about the ministry and how he, as a pastor, really wished he could get out of the restrictions of his role. He said, there are people that you meet where you work. He said, I will never get to meet them. He said, I wish I could. I wish I could go where you go. I wish I could be as free as you are in your relationships with other people. I began to get the message. Still didn't quite get it. Took a few years down the line. But the point is that if you leave the path that God has marked out for you, you will end up walking round in circles. Someone mentioned earlier, I don't know if it was Springboard or in the worship time here, about God just walking round a mountain in circles. I really want to get to the top of the mountain that God's given me to climb. I do not want to be wasting my time just walking around in circles. And for many years of my life, I know that my journey has been hindered in that way. I've totally lost what I'm supposed to be saying. The other thing that you will do, if you're not absolutely focused on doing what God has called you to do, you'll end up, somebody said to me the other day, you'll end up not building with gold, silver and precious stones. You'll be building with wood and hay and straw. You know, there are some things we do. I can think of things that I've done, and on paper you'd say, that's brilliant, Steve. You must feel so blessed at the things you did. But actually, if I look deep inside my heart and I see that some of the motives weren't as pure as they ought to be, this was a bit of me being able to stand up above the others. Was it really gold and silver for me? Or for me, was that wood and hay and straw? And God won't give me much credit for that, because he'd never asked me to do it. We can waste so much of our time. So all I'm saying really is, and this is when it really comes down to church, because I can talk to all of you individually, but actually we're church. I read, because time's running out, isn't it amazing how quickly the clock goes? I thought, I won't last more than 10 minutes. This is a modern translation of 1 Corinthians 12. Listen to this. What I want to talk about now is the various ways God's Spirit gets worked into our lives. This is complex and often misunderstood, but I want you to be informed and knowledgeable. God's various gifts are handed out everywhere, but they all originate in God's Spirit. If you have a particular gift, be thankful for it. Use it well to the best of your ability, but don't be proud about it. God gave it to you. God's various gifts, God's various ministries are carried out everywhere, but they all originate in God's Spirit. God's various expressions of power are in action everywhere, but God himself is behind it all. Each person, including everyone here, and I hope if you don't know it, then you soon will do, each person is given something to do that shows who God is. Everyone gets in on it, God's plan. Everyone benefits. All kinds of things are handed out by the Spirit, and to all kinds of people. The variety is wonderful. Wise counsel, clear understanding, simple trust, healing the sick, miraculous acts, proclamation, distinguishing between different spirits, tongues, interpretations of tongues. All these gifts have a common origin, but are handed out one by one by the one Spirit of God. He decides who gets what and when. You can see easily enough how this kind of thing works by looking no further than your own body. Your body has many parts, limbs, organs, cells. By the way, if you do feel important, I came across an interesting fact a week or so ago. There was this program on the telly about how long is a piece of string. And you can imagine, it's horizon things, so they get into science and whatnot. But part of it was, you know how in our school chemistry books, picture of a molecule, you've got your little blob of neutrons and protons in the middle, and then these electrons bombing around the outside. Anybody familiar with that? Yeah, good. Well, you know, I sort of thought it was like that and that. But apparently the size of the particles is so small and the size of the space is so big that they've worked out, and I have no authority for this other than the Horizon program that I watched, that if you condense all the space out of all the molecules of which we're made, this is better than saying you're 95% water, if you took all that space out, you could condense the whole human race into something the size of a sugar cube. Now, is that true or not? I think it might be, actually. Everything I hear about that kind of thing makes God's creation sound absolutely more and more amazing. But if you feel important, you just think how big you are in that sugar cube. Anyway, your body has many parts, limbs, organs, cells, but no matter how many parts you can name, you're still one body. It's exactly the same with Christ. By means of his one Spirit, we all said goodbye to our partial, piecemeal, independent lives. We each used to independently call our own shots, but then we entered into a large and integrated life in which he has the final say in everything. I want you to think about how all this makes you more significant, not less. A body isn't just a single part blown up into something huge. It's all the different but similar parts arranged and functioning together. If foot said, "I'm not elegant like hand, embellished with rings, I guess I don't belong to this body," would it make it so? If ear said, "I'm not beautiful like eye, limpid and expressive, I don't deserve a place on the head," would you want to remove it from your body? If the body was all eye, how could it hear? If it was all an ear, how could it smell? As it is, we see that God has carefully placed each part of the body right where he wanted it. But I also want you to think about how this keeps your significance from getting blown up into self-importance. For no matter how significant you are, it is only because of what you are part of. An enormous eye or a gigantic hand wouldn't be a body, but a monster. And we could go on, and my time's run out. Two things I just want to say. Two things I didn't mention about the chess game. The pawn. Do you know what happens to a pawn if it keeps at what it's given? Gets right across the board? What happens? Becomes the queen. And somehow, when we had that song earlier, and I scribbled the lines down, when the guy was singing on the CD, he says, "Here I go again, and I'm thinking of the time when I'll stand with my Redeemer." You know, I can't wait. Paul was talking to us some weeks ago now about the second coming of Christ and what a wonderful thing it's going to be there. But you see, you might feel just a pawn. But you know, pawns can become queens. And for each one of us, there's going to come a day when actually we'll be given a new resurrection body. And with that resurrection body, we are going to feel so thankful that actually we understood what it was our job to do. We got on with it. We didn't look at other people. We didn't compare ourselves. We didn't get down about ourselves. We got on with what God had given us to do. And the only approval that really matters, although other people's approval is nice, is very simply that there's going to come a day when we so obviously and completely get God's approval on our lives. Thank you.